Whiplash.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. So many barometers this morning, only two directions the market can go. A Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing today for General Growth Properties, the nation's second largest operator of shopping malls. From JPMorgan Chase, a better-than-expected earnings report. We also heard from the government this morning that initial jobless claims fell unexpectedly, but continuing week-to-week claims is at a record high again. How's Wall Street reacting? Pretty much unscathed at this hour, the Dow and the S&P 500 untouched, pretty much even where they were yesterday, where they closed, and the NASDAQ up about 0.5% at this hour. European shares are higher, up to 2%. Asian markets closed mixed. Okay, let's check in with Jim Dunnigan, the managing executive of investments at PNC Wealth Management. Jim, what's making the biggest impact today?
I think you see two things. One is the profit and earnings report from J.P. Morgan. And then the other is the employment numbers on unemployment claims. I think those are the two drivers we'll see today.
What do these J.P. Morgan numbers say to you, these profit numbers that came out this morning, say to you about the rest of the bank earnings that we're expecting?
I think you're seeing some signs that there are some profitability in the banking sector. They can make money with the yield curve where it is and with the economy stabilizing. And I think you'll start to see that bleed through to the rest of the financial sector on some better signs that we're seeing some stability overall within the banking sector.
Jim, housing construction numbers out today, the lowest level in 50 years. Is that making a difference?
It does. You know, I think we're seeing some signs of stability in the market, but you're going to get some numbers which will throw us off course a little bit of that. And housing starts plunge still shows there's some work to do in the housing sector.
All right. Jim Dunnigan, managing executive of investments at PNC Wealth Management. Jim, thank you.
You bet.
And staying on the housing theme this morning, RealtyTrack reports the number of homeowners who have received at least one foreclosure notice went up big time over last year. The first quarter jump over last year was 24%. And the news comes as President Obama released the latest details on his plan to help people modify loans. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
The Treasury this week finally launched its $75 billion program to keep 9 million borrowers in their homes. And what do analysts predict will be the first big impact of the program?
We still have the biggest wave of foreclosures yet to hit.
That's Jack McCabe of McCabe Research and Consulting. He says many banks put a hold on foreclosures until the details of the Obama plan were released. Now those banks will begin foreclosing on properties that don't qualify for the program: vacant houses, second homes, and places owned by speculators. McCabe predicts this wave of foreclosures will start to drive more bank failures, adding to the two dozen we've already had this year.
It's my projection that by the end of the year, that number will be well over 200 and could be considerably higher.
He says the rise in foreclosures in places like Florida, Arizona, and California also mean housing prices there haven't yet hit bottom.
That was Dan Gretsch reporting. Southwest Airlines this morning reported a pretty big loss in the first quarter, $91 million. The company says traffic fell and that it's in its toughest revenue environment ever. On that note, Southwest has implemented a hiring freeze and it's offering buyouts to employees to trim the workforce.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, where you can choose up to four customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win. By Monsanto, committed to sustainable agriculture, creating hybrid and biotech seeds designed to increase crop yields and conserve natural resources. Produce more, conservemore.com. And by CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution by carrying the load of 280 trucks by rail. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
The Summit of the Americas kicks off tomorrow in Trinidad and Tobago, and no doubt President Obama's decision to ease travel and money travel restrictions for Cuba will likely come up. We're joined now by our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Chris, is this the start of something bigger, or is that it?
Well, depends on which country that you're in, but I think that is the beginning of a fundamental change in U.S. policy toward Cuba, at least when it comes toward trade and investment. And for Cuba, I think it's the end of the embargo. Now, that's a dramatic statement. The embargo has been on there for over four decades. But I do think we are starting to see the beginning of increased trade between Cuba and the U.S.
I guess you could look at the impact on Cuba and say it's positive. But what about for the economy in South Florida, where a lot of Cubans and Cuban Americans live?
Well, South Florida, as you know, is in a depression. If you're in the camp that believes, in general, that freer trade is good for an economy, I think this can only benefit the South Florida economy, to have more commerce between the two nations. Now, Cuba is very poor, so it's not that this is going to turn around the South Florida economy, but increased trade flows between the countries, the opportunities for entrepreneurs to develop businesses, net-net, it's a good thing for South Florida, and it's a good thing for Cuba. You know, most of the time, trade is a win-win situation.
What kind of lessons have we learned from this trade embargo over the past, four decades or more?
And I think the real lesson that you take from this is that trade is revolutionary. Commerce is revolutionary. And trade is not just money and entrepreneurial opportunities. It also means exposing an economy to different ideas and ideas that are an anathema to a bureaucracy that is in power. And we have a very good counterexample. You remember in the 1990s, the Clinton administration came under a lot of pressure to set up trade embargoes with China because of a lot of the human rights violations. And I'm not minimizing, by the way, I am not minimizing human rights violations in China. I am not minimizing human rights violations in Cuba. But the administration continued the trade with China, and it was the right move. China is now more integrated into the global economy. There's a lot more information in that economy. It's moving in the right direction. And so that's what I want to see trade with Cuba. I think that's the real lesson to take here.
Our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, joining us this morning. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Share your thoughts with us. Check out our Scratchpad. That's the online blogger and host, Scott Jagow's Scratchpad there. And you can share your thoughts online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.